Hi, and welcome into Surviving Paradise, the podcast that takes a sometimes serious, oftentimes humorous look at the claim by the leadership of Jehovah's Witnesses that we are all living in a modern-day spiritual paradise hosted by them. I'm your host, Stacy Bauman, former elder, ministerial servant, most importantly, a kid raised as one of Jehovah's Witnesses throughout the 1970s and 1980s. Warning, as we do, we try to have some fun here. We try to heal. Some episodes are more serious than others, but there's always sarcasm, humor, my own observations and experiences. Don't be afraid to laugh and have tears. Please note, it is never meant to offend. I'm super happy to have anyone and everyone here that might be curious. I have to tell you, it is good to be back in paradise this week. I hope everyone had a fantastic week. I had a week off from the show. I was traveling and spent 5 days at an international coffee convention, meeting with people from around the world and drinking gallons of the planet's finest coffees from all sorts of countries of origin. It's a passion. It's what I do full time. And it was amazing to see people from all walks of life from around the world, old friends, new friends, and the like. So here I am, highly caffeinated and ready to walk through the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses spiritual paradise this week. And I have to say, as usual, a lot has gone down in Jehovah's organization in the past week or so, including David Splane, King David. Wow, it just hit me, King David, threatening governments and telling them that if they don't stop being mean to Jehovah's Witnesses, Jehovah is going to get them. But that was small compared to the fact that Taylor Swift took a pot shot at Jehovah's Witnesses in her latest album that just dropped. I know some of you are super excited. I don't get it. Story for another day. But she took a pot shot at Jehovah's Witnesses with her aptly titled song, "The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived." Couldn't help but wonder if that was a take on the greatest man who ever lived. And there is so much I want to do with that. There is so much I want to do with her song, "The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived," where she has a lyric and she's talking about someone wearing a Jehovah's Witness suit. And I couldn't help but think at that point that maybe that's why Jesus initiated the looser dress codes as of late. Guys don't have to wear ties and suits anymore. Taylor's making fun of them. Taylor might have even pissed off Jesus. Time for some new light. Or maybe she was being inspired from heaven to describe Stephen Lett and his nine pals in upstate New York. Because I have to tell you, let's face it, it takes a pretty small man to call babies enemies of God and to sit back and watch children be harmed. Or maybe I have to say it in her song, "The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived," and I'm sorry for anyone offended. She's referring to the nine guys' small penis. Never mind. It's a syndrome. But what a week. What a week in spiritual paradise. I feel like I missed so much. If you didn't check out that song, go check it out. Really weird. Let's get personal this week. Let's talk about something that often makes people uncomfortable, me included. Let's discuss our ego. You might be thinking, where is he going with this one? And I have to say, that's a valid question. Ego is a complex thing with human beings, and Jehovah's Witnesses aren't immune to the dynamic of all things ego. Our survival, frankly, depends on our egos. Even when you believe you're living in the last day of the last days, that, as we know, never end. It really doesn't matter where you land on creation versus evolution. The ego is still a very real part of our everyday life because we're the planet's most evolved mammal, the human being. I think it's fair to say that most of us associate the concept of ego with people that are stuck up or like themselves a little bit too much. Maybe you can think of nine guys that fit that bill. And we tend to think ego is associated with such things. I mean, who can forget that kid in grade school who carried himself like he was God's gift to the fifth grade? Remember that guy? He had all the clothes, the shoes, the athletic ability, and the smile that made all the girls weak in the knees. We all had a guy like that. Or maybe it was a girl who had the perfect hair and every boy was in love with her. We tend to associate the ego with arrogant people or those we consider to be stuck up. But the ego is so much more. And I am certainly not a psychiatrist or psychologist, but I like to play one on the podcast because it interests me. From Ego as the Rational Part of Personality by Kendra Cherry, a psychosocial rehabilitation specialist, psychology educator, and the author of Everything Psychology book from October 2023, she had this to say. She's a real psychiatrist after all. She said, quote, ego has a couple of different meanings in psychology. In Freud's classic psychoanalytic theory, it refers to the realistic part of personality that strikes a balance between our primal urges and moral conscience. In other cases, people use it to refer to a person's sense of identity and self-importance. Having a healthy ego is important, but having an inflated sense of self can lead to problems. The word ego comes from the Latin word for I. Freud himself referred to it as das Ich. I don't know if I'm saying that right, meaning the I in German. The term ego was added by Freud's translator. End quote. So clearly, the ego is important. And then there is this from Nikki Saletti from Colorado State University, a licensed therapist who had this to say, quote, understanding the definition of ego can be helpful for several reasons. First, the concept of ego is thought to play a major role in how we perceive ourselves and our relationships with others. The ego can shape our self-identity and self-worth, which may influence our behavior and interactions with others. Second, understanding the ego can provide valuable insights into our mind's workings, motivations, desires, and fears. Understanding ego may help us better understand our thought processes and behavior patterns. End quote. So in both of those references, the ego is clearly critical to a successful and healthy life for each of us. And like most things in life, it can go sideways and cause us all a lot of problems. It's not hard to see how it plays a role in our lives daily, even if we do believe God chose a publishing company in New York in 1919. But why? From What is the Ego? Greg Henriques, PhD on psychology today, he had this to say, quote, the well-known social psychologist Elliot Aronson argues that this motivational force of self-justification plays a central role in our lives. He cites the massive literature in cognitive dissonance as being evidence for the strong motivational forces that are in operation as the ego generates defenses. In a similar way, the ego is a kind of mental organ in humans. But what did it evolve to do? One way to think about it is that it is the thing that allows you to answer questions from others. Consider this remarkable fact. Humans are the only primate that has ever been known to ask a question. This is quite astonishing when we think about how much of human life is occupied with questions and how to answer them. Questions are everywhere, and they play a huge role in our lives. End quote. So if you were paying attention there, did he just say that human beings and their egos are the only mammals that ask and answer questions? Yeah, and there it is. We've been told that Jehovah's Witnesses got their start with a question. Have you ever thought about that? See what I did there? You remember, you can still find the very question that kicked this all off. It's in the New World Translation at Genesis 3, 1 through 5. Who can forget it? Where it tells us, quote, in the most important question in all of human history, now the serpent was the most cautious of all the wild animals of the field that Jehovah God had made. So it said to the woman, did God really say to you that you must not eat from every tree of the garden? At this, the woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden. But God has said about the fruit of the tree that is in the middle of the garden, you must not eat from it. No, you must not touch it. Otherwise, you will die. At this, the serpent said to the woman, you certainly will not die. For God knows that in the very day you eat from it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and bad. End quote. This whole thing, this whole journey we call life, according to Jehovah's Witnesses, got kicked off with a question. And it wasn't any question. It was the type of question that appeals to ego. Jehovah's Witnesses believe that this is how it all began. It began with an invisible spirit that was perfect, deciding for some unknown reason to sign his own death wish by asking a lowly human, a naked one at that, that he watched created, a question. And for those that think that Satan is a dumbass, he clearly understood the human ego. Even a perfect one. This was, or couldn't have been, should I say, written by another man, could it? I mean, Eve, the woman, had an ego that didn't even question why a snake could talk to her. She just bit. Adam? Well, that took the world's most beautiful, and by the way, only woman, to convince him to take a bite. Oh yeah. Ego. There just happens to be a lot of ego in that story, doesn't there? From Satan himself thinking he was as powerful as Jehovah, to Eve not needing a man to make decisions, to Adam only being swayed by a beautiful naked woman, to Jehovah and his son watching on because it was all below them to stop all of it. I mean, come on. This entire story couldn't have been written or influenced by human males, could it? With, I don't know, notoriously big egos? No. This egocentric story was recorded by God himself, or so we are told by Jehovah's Witnesses. And so it begins. We all know how it works with our egos. We've seen it in action before, and I'm going to pick on the guys because I'm a guy. You have a buddy walk up to a woman in a bar. She's cute. He's attracted. He hits on her. She rejects him. Ouch. We've all been there. He returns to his group of buddies that are watching on, and he tells them, oh yeah. Oh yeah, she wants me. She totally wants me. She's just playing hard to get. Behold, the male ego. And we've all seen it before. Jehovah's Witnesses aren't immune to any of this as imperfect humans. And well, the governing body knows it. It's my assertion to anyone listening that the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses, much like Moses, who we are told wrote the Garden of Eden account, allegedly, is fully aware of how the human ego works and how to manipulate that ego to their benefit. For those of us that have left, hindsight allows us to see how God's organization used our own ego against us in so many ways. for the brave Pimo or Jehovah's Witnesses that is sitting here listening in, I encourage you to consider some ways that Jesus' nine kings in upstate New York that are currently demanding your obedience and currently controlling an estimated 8 million Jehovah's Witnesses plus, and they're tapping into everyone's ego to do it. So let's start there. Let's start at the top. The governing body, those nine men, appeal to our egos by employing what I call an elitist mentality inside their religion. Everyone who's been a Jehovah's Witness knows what I speak of when you give it a few seconds of thought. But for those that may not be aware, only Jehovah's Witnesses possess the knowledge of all of life's truths, and they alone are directed by God and Jesus themselves. Would you consider that just to be, I don't know, a little elitist? If your brain is firing and you're thinking, wait a minute, I actually read the Bible. I'm one of the few witnesses who read and studied it. Didn't Jehovah use non-Israelites to accomplish his will? Didn't he? I can think of a few, you know, like Caleb, like Rahab, like Ruth the Moabitess. She wasn't even an Israelite. What about the Egyptians on occasion? How about Job? Does anyone know his nationality? Not really. He was just an Oriental. And yet he was Satan's favorite target. I only know he needed a referral to a good dermatologist and that he checked his ego at the door when Satan, formerly known as a snake, decided to mess with him and his family personally. Or, I don't know, how about the sailors that tossed Jonah overboard so he could live in stomach acid without oxygen for 3 days on the world's greatest roller coaster ride inside a fish, all for refusing to go out in field service in nearby Nineveh? If you're thinking that, you're my kind of people. But look, none of that matters. None of it. The governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses has created a culture spanning well over a century that appeals to our ego. The message is very clear. We alone have the truth, and you're lucky we let you be here with us. It's all undeserved kindness, after all. And with that invitation to have a Bible study and get baptized as a Jehovah's Witness, you wonder how you got so lucky. And a little hint here, most of it is just because of where you live on the planet, FYI. But your ego is firing. You feel loved, and you feel so lucky, so fortunate to be a part, to be chosen, invited, and drawn to the only real organization on earth. And listen, that messaging really works. It worked on me. It's worked on millions. It works. We all want to be seen. We all want to be heard. We all want to be loved and a part of something with greater purpose. Would you agree with that? I think that's a fair comment. That's part of the human experience. And when those things are absent in your life, you feel it. And there's oftentimes very serious problems that come along with that. But what is all of that? Why do we want to be seen, heard, loved, and part of community? Folks, in many ways, it's that ego. It's our ego. But put all of that aside. The governing body wants the world to know that nine guys who may change everything at any moment are not only elite, because Jesus chose them personally after all, but well, despite being on the fast track to a throne in heaven where they will kill anyone that doesn't agree with them today, they're also very humble guys. Did you know that? They're very humble. They're kings. They're going to heaven. You must obey them. And if you don't, they'll kill you. And in the interim, they'll shun you. But they have no ego. They have no ego. They're very humble guys. In case you missed the message, let's let them tell us for themselves. Are you ready? Reasoning from the Scriptures, pages 203 to 204, the now mothballed, poopy brown book that we were required to study and give all sorts of presentations on the service meeting and use in field service, had this to say, quote, "The Bible does not agree with the modern view that there are many acceptable ways to worship God." Sounds elitist. Ephesians 4:5 says, "There is one Lord, one faith." Jesus stated, "Narrow is the gate and cramped the road leading off into life, and few are the ones finding it." Because Jehovah's Witnesses base all of their beliefs, their standards for conduct, and organizational procedures on the Bible. Their faith in the Bible itself as God's Word gives them the conviction that what they have is indeed the truth. Please note the next sentence. So, their position is not egotistical. End quote. Well, okay then, governing body. If you say you're not egotistical, I'll just have to believe you because you told me to. And you're in charge because you're the elite nine in upstate New York. Nothing egomaniacal about that, right? But I don't know. Some of your messaging seems to point out that you have a truly elitist mentality. From the Watchtower of 1983, February 15th, page 12, we get the quote, "Similarly, Jehovah is using only one organization today to accomplish his will. To receive everlasting life in the earthly paradise, we must identify that organization and serve God as part of it." End quote. I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty elitist. One, them. And the messaging is emphasized and promoted and disseminated week after week to Jehovah's Witnesses. If you want to live forever, you must be part of this one organization. One. Got it. And let's be blunt. How did I get lucky enough to be chosen as one of 8 million people to be in this organization and get everlasting life? Why wasn't that kid that lives in Pakistan chosen? I don't know. Let's put some thought to it. Wow, I must be special. Because with those questions comes your ego kicks in. And you, my friend, have been chosen from among all of mankind to be a Jehovah's Witness. And trust me, Jehovah's Witnesses do think they're special. This podcast host at one time included. I truly did. The emotions span from feeling very special to then almost this overwhelming heavy guilt when we start asking, why me? I'm just a guy. But I probably don't need to relate the conversations or perceptions from life inside Jehovah's Witnesses when they feel, well, just a little better than everyone else. Do you remember that feeling? Do you remember the feeling? We're a little bit better. We're going in field service to save your life. We have a life-saving message. If you don't listen, we're going to talk about you getting killed and who might get your house in the new system. We're just a little bit better than you. And that is all designed by the governing body to massage our egos. It's been going on in this religion for many, many decades. The Watchtower of 2022, February, page 4, says this, quote, "The plain truth is that we cannot say that we trust in Jehovah if we do not trust in," who? Quote, "his earthly representatives, those whom Jehovah trusts." Today, Jehovah leads the earthly part of his organization by means of the faithful and discreet slave. We show that we trust in Jehovah's way of doing things by heeding the direction we receive from the organization and the elders. End quote. The, as in one. Elite company, elite leadership. If you're baptized and obeying, you're very, very special. And this appeal to elitism and our egos goes back to the beginning in Jehovah's Witnesses. That messaging is woven through everything that they say or do. Us against them. We're special, they're not. We've got everything they need. It appeals to ego. And again, it goes back to the beginning. See Chuck Taze Russell saying he was God's one and only mouthpiece when he's kicked off this organization that is today Jehovah's Witnesses. Or how about this one? The Watchtower of 1958, October 15th, page 614, where it says, quote, "As for humans upon earth, on the side of Jehovah will be all those fully dedicated to him and who are faithfully following Jesus Christ. Compared with earth's billions, these are indeed few. On Satan's side will be all the rest of mankind, more than 99.9%, end quote. You see, if you're a Jehovah's Witness, and if certainly if you were born into this organization, you're born in thinking you're an elite company. You, dear baptized publisher, are part of the 0.01%. And if that doesn't make the ego feel good, and in some cases just feel safe, like we've arrived, what will? A Jehovah's Witness ego is so awash in this kind of messaging that they walk through life feeling like they don't need higher education. They don't need a decent job. They don't need to plan for retirement or to even worry about their bodies or keeping them in good shape or their health. After all, they're part of the 0.01% that will get a new body any day now. So why take care of it? And with all sarcasm aside, with seriousness, this manipulation of a Jehovah's Witness's ego, it impacts everything that we do in life. They can face life on cruise control. Did you ever get that feeling when you were a witness? You're so special. You have all the answers to life's questions. Your ego feels like it's arrived. We're there. That your life just kind of goes into cruise control. It's that schedule. The 2 to 3 meetings a week. The field service on the weekends. The district conventions. The study at night. You're on cruise control. Because your ego, the one you were born with, has been massaged by 9 guys in New York to believe that you're special. And as for the governing body, nothing screams elitism and healthy ego like being one of 9 guys on earth, only 9, that Jesus directs personally. And one of 9 guys out of 144,000, pretty small number, that will go to heaven and, you know, kill the rest of us for not massaging their egos and obeying them. Check that. Isn't that something? That's one hell of a healthy ego. The entire doctrine of the 144,000 creates elitism. Then you narrow it down in 2012 to the governing body. It just gets narrower. And it speaks to their ego. They literally tell the world Jesus speaks and directs them. And I could have sworn, I couldn't help but think about this on this subject, I could have sworn that Jeffrey Jackson, King Jeffrey, himself a king, on his way to heaven, under oath at the Australian Royal Commission, said that to feel they alone had the truth and were directing all of mankind by means of Jesus would be, he used the word, presumptuous. Surely Jeffrey doesn't lie, right? I mean, he's a king. Jesus wouldn't let him lie on the stand, would he? Am I the only one that has long wondered what it's like to look into a mirror as a member of the governing body and think, damn, Jehovah chose me. I must be really special. That is one hell of an ego. It's good time to note that psychologists say that an inflated ego, including one believing you're one of nine kings on fast track to heaven, well, that inflated ego creates a few unhealthy challenges. From the Connolly Counseling Center, we get this, quote, "Those with narcissism," first drop of that word here, "adopt an extremely fragile ego system, and this manifests in dysregulated views of self, overconfident behaviors, and arrogance. On the surface, mask a deep need for validation and praise," end quote. Do you mean like claiming you alone speak for Jesus Christ of the Bible and we must obey you in any situation, whether it makes sense or not? Do you mean like that? Overconfident, arrogant, and a deep-seated need to feel important? A couple of quick thoughts on this. Would this type of unhealthy ego lead to a governing body member over-drinking? Maybe even being caught with a basket full of booze at a liquor store on a Sunday morning? Or how about this? With the definition I just read about ego and narcissism, doesn't that sound more like that guy, should I say snake, Satan the devil, than the king the governing body claims to represent? Doesn't it sound more like the other guy? Overinflated, fragile ego with a deep need for validation and praise? Sounds more like Satan, doesn't it? Or how about claiming you are anointed? How about that word? Touched by the hand of God himself. Or maybe just a few days ago, hearing David Splain low-key threaten human governments if they don't lay off Jehovah's Witnesses and his organization, claiming Jehovah is going to get you if you keep being mean to us and taking our money away. Do you mean like that? An extremely fragile ego system that manifests in dysregulated views of yourself couldn't apply to the nine guys in New York, could it? In the end, claiming you're a king who speaks with God and we all must obey you no matter what may just qualify as classic narcissism. I know what you're thinking, and it can be uncomfortable for a Jehovah's Witness to hear that. But the Connolly Counseling Center in this reference continues with this, quote, "A narcissist only feeds on the egos of those who allow it. Disengaging in the game will denigrate your status and worth to the narcissist, and that is a gift that will pay off in the long run," end quote. I hope that any witness brave enough to sit in on this little show will give that some thought. It only works on your ego if you allow it to. And there isn't enough time today to go into all the reasons narcissism and self-inflated views of themselves run deep with the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses, that same faithful and discreet slave in upstate New York. But most of us, and not all Jehovah's Witnesses today, are of the elite, anointed class. Most of us, and most people currently associated, were chosen to be paradise dwellers. You know, fruit baskets and animals. And as one who used to believe I'd have my own Black Panther and a mansion on a waterfall, from time to time, I questioned my own ego, even when I was there. I often drifted off in daydream on this subject during the joys of field service because I hated field service. Nothing spoke to my ego more than thinking Jehovah the Almighty needed me. He needed me. Even saying that makes me laugh today, and I've been out for 14, almost 15 years. The governing body has succeeded in getting millions of people to believe that Jehovah, the creator of the universe and beyond, and his son Jesus, the actual real creator outside of him, that they need you and me to get their message to other human beings in 2024. I mean, come on. Satan got to use a snake. Seemed pretty special. Certainly got Eve's attention. I often thought in my daydreams in the car group, can I just be a talking lion? I'll bet people will listen to me. Can't they write a message using clouds in the sky or something? I don't know, thereby saving a few trees and skipping all those watchtowers and books they print? By the way, why didn't Jesus just send a talking crocodile to eat Satan while he was inside the snake? I'm sure Eve would have taken note and skipped the whole fruit thing. Am I the only one who thinks about this stuff? If I am, guilty as charged. I guess my ego is a little off kilter. But folks, make no mistake, everything I just rattled off, that's taught by and to Jehovah's Witnesses. The everyday Jehovah's Witness is taught to believe that they're like the heroes of the Bible. It happens at so many Watchtower studies. As a conductor for 8 years, I would marvel at this on some weeks. You refuse to attend the birthday party at school. Guess what? You, dear publisher, are like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They got tossed into a furnace. You're just being ostracized by classmates for not eating cake. But you're as brave as them. You're as faithful as them. You're the one good person in your neighborhood because you're a Jehovah's Witness. That makes you, dear publisher, like Enoch, bravely mowing your lawn among the future dead people on your street. You think Stephen led us a whack job. You're like the Apostle Peter, who at one point denied Jesus. Just say you're sorry, get in line, and it's all good. You see, even in the 21st century, you can be like Jeremiah, be like Ruth, you can be like Moses. On and on it goes. You're chosen to be with an elite group of people, and let's be honest about it. It feels good. It feels good. And that really is an appeal to our egos on some level. And Jehovah's Witnesses listen to and accept that message constantly. The dramas, the Watchtower studies, you're just like the heroes of the Bible. And they've only been able to enhance that appeal to our egos by now making, you know, low budget, really bad beard and acting movies, all these videos they're coming up with now. We've even got music videos with pop songs and young people running and all sorts of crazy stuff. We've got Caleb and Sophia cartoons for the kids. It all appeals to ego. You're part of an elite class led by an elite group of guys in upstate New York. And let's face it, let's just be honest with ourselves here. We all have insecurities. We're insecure. And remember how this all kicked off with a question? Do you have a few questions in life? I still do. We all have a few questions. What's the purpose? Why am I here? What should I be doing? These guys have found a way to speak to our ego. When a person's ego starts to question a few things, there is always the reminder that they are elite. From the Watchtower of 2011, July 15th, page 18, it tells us this, quote, "If we stop actively supporting Jehovah's work, then we start following Satan. There is no middle ground," end quote. This stuff works. It works. Who wouldn't rather be like Moses splitting open the Red Sea? Who wouldn't rather be that pioneer who looks back at some Bible hero like Enoch or Noah who preached unsuccessfully because there ain't a whole lot going on in the preaching work in Jehovah's Witnesses, but I'm going to be like Noah. It works. Many of us can attest to the fact that it works, and that includes me. Aside from elitism and claims that they alone have life's truths, there's the subtle, not so subtle appeal to ego within the organization's infrastructure. And I'm going to guess just with that comment, there might be a few of you out there thinking of examples at this very moment. But despite that, please come with those ideas. Let me plainly state my own opinion and observations of how they've baked this into the infrastructure of the organization, therefore the life of a Jehovah's Witness. And I'm going to make a bold comment. Might make some people upset. But here it is. The governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses encourages title chasing. They openly encourage it. Oh yeah, nothing speaks to a person's ego more than the endless pursuit of an important title in God's one and only true organization on earth, truly elite. And look, this can happen to anyone. This isn't unique to Jehovah's Witnesses. I get it, but we're talking about them. It's part of human nature, and that is why it works. Having a title or relating yourself to a hero, but certainly a title in 2024 in a congregation, that appeals to egos. It adds to our sense of self-importance or value. It makes us feel as though we've accomplished something. Those aren't necessarily bad things, but it might be bad when it's you against them and everyone else gets to die. And you know who else knew this? The leadership of Jehovah's Witnesses. And it reaches all the way back to Charles Taze Russell, who at the time was given a nice title. He was called Pastor Russell. Then at one point, he was claimed that he was the Laodicean messenger of the book of Revelation. He was given himself titles, who was then succeeded by Judge Joe Rutherford. You know, he had a title too, who doubled down on the ego stroking, most especially his own. See the title Judge Joe. Long history there. I don't think it's a big reach for anyone listening who's been a Jehovah's Witness or currently is to see that titles are very, very important inside that organization. I realize there may be some who disagree with this, but it's my belief that titles, most of which were established under the corporate-minded Judge Joe himself, they play a significant role in the ego of a Jehovah's Witness. And I'm going to pick on my gender especially here. It's especially true with men. Males. I'm always willing to chuck myself under the bus on this show. I just believe that honesty is healing, and I think it gives people a rare look into reality. And let me just say it right here and now. I personally bought into their program of title chasing. I bought in hook, line, and sinker. I myself was a fatherless boy who had no direction as a teenager, who was playing sports and chasing cute girls, who gave up on any dreams of going to college for journalism, which is what I enjoyed. I wanted to play small school sports, or even as I aged, climbing the corporate ladder and having a big career. I gave up on all of that. Why? I don't know. As a boy and a self-proclaimed title chaser as a witness, being compared to the boat-building zoologist who abstained from sex, apparently, until he was 500 years old, you know, that guy Noah, and you knew I'd sneak him in, he's a favorite. Well, all of that appealed to my ego. A Jehovah's Witness man, male, or brother, they are literally pushed toward getting or obtaining a title. It starts with the title publisher. Oh, goody, I'm a publisher now. But men, because it is an extremely misogynistic organization, the men are quickly encouraged to chase bigger titles, responsibilities, and quite frankly, power. All of which corresponds to really a corporate world model. Giving a person a sense of prestige or importance, and something that men typically try to attain to. And I'm sure that I'm not alone when I say we all remember the endless talks directed at brothers to reach out for privileges of service. I love how they veil it in privileges. Once the elders decide you can join their club, again, no mention of the Holy Spirit in choosing you, they recommend you. And guess what you get? You get a title. for the Brunners, the Watchtower of October 2019, pages 20 through 25, What Will Jehovah Cause You to Become? Aptly titled, we get this quote. What about you young brothers who are approaching adulthood? There is a great need for energetic men to take an added responsibility as ministerial servants. In many congregations, the elders outnumber the ministerial servants. Could some of you young brothers cultivate the desire to shoulder additional responsibilities in the congregation? At times, some brothers say, I'm happy just to serve as a regular publisher. I'm okay with that title. Back to the quote, if that is the way you feel, beg Jehovah to help you cultivate the desire to qualify as a ministerial servant and to give you the power to do all you can in loving service to him. End quote. Beg Jehovah to be a ministerial servant. And let me tell you, within the culture of Jehovah's Witnesses, there's people nodding their heads. The title of ministerial servant gives a guy instant street cred. He's immediately a good one. And no, I'm not kidding. So ingrained is the idea of chasing a position or title that we're not going to leave the sisters or the ladies out, that even women, again, otherwise known as sisters, always found that weird, subject for another day, even the women are openly encouraged to seek a man that has a title in the organization for marriage. Some sisters, and I actually knew a couple, would literally only consider dating a man or a brother that was a servant. He had to be a ministerial servant, a special pioneer, an elder. The end result, let me tell you, as a guy, your ego feels good. And frankly, so does hers. It gave the sisters the ability to walk around and say, well, my husband is an elder. And we all know sisters that did that. That was their sole goal in life. There was some joke about skipping getting your college diploma to get the title of circuit overseer's wife. It was a big deal. Title chasing. Would you like proof of this even for the sisters from the Watchtower, of December 2023, pages 18 through 23 in the article, Young Sisters Become Mature Christian Women. Guess what they're going to encourage them to do? We get this, quote, you may choose to get married. The qualities and skills that we have discussed will help you to become a capable wife. Of course, you are considering marriage. You should choose your mate very carefully. It is one of the most important decisions you will ever make. Remember, you will come under the headship of the man you marry. So ask yourself, is he a mature Christian? Is he putting spiritual interests first in his life? Does he make wise decisions? Can he admit his mistakes? Does he respect women? Does he have the skills needed to support me spiritually, materially, and emotionally? Does he handle responsibility well? For example, what congregation assignments does he have, and how does he handle them? End quote. The subtle, not so subtle implication that sisters should only look for guys with titles that are doing big things in the congregation. It continues from the Keep Yourselves in God's Love book, page 114 through 116, in a special box on the page, What Am I Looking For in a Mate? The sisters are given this, quote, how can the following scriptures help a sister to identify the qualities needed in a mate? And it lists 1 Timothy 3:1 through 7. You might recognize it. It's the reference for a sister. She needs to open it up and read it. And guess what it says and describes in detail? Folks, it's the canned description from the Apostle Paul of elders. In other words, from the box, in their book, sisters, you should marry an elder. He's a nobody? He's a lowly publisher? Is he really worth dating? The subtlety is all there. And we all know culturally, for anyone that was a witness, it was openly promoted. People would openly say, you should only pursue a brother with privileges. It was very common. Ego. Appeals to ego. You can marry the prince, or you can marry the pauper. You can marry the elder, or you can marry the 4-hour-a-month publisher. And let me tell you, it works inside Jehovah's Witnesses. It works everywhere within the organization. And isn't all of those designations, those privileges and titles, aren't they interesting? If you think I'm nitpicking on this, I want to just remind you of what Jesus himself said about title chasers and by extension, ego. In Matthew 23, 9 through 12 of the New World Translation, Jesus very plainly stated the following, quote, "Moreover, do not call anyone your father on earth, for one is your father, the heavenly one. Neither be called leaders, for your leader is one, the Christ. But the greatest one among you must be your minister. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted," end quote. Then, if that isn't enough right from the New World Translation under inspiration for a witness, then there are their own words found in the Watchtower of 1990, February 1st, pages 10 through 14, you'll find the article identifying the man of lawlessness, which tells us the following, quote, "Similarly, Elihu, in rebutting Job's hypocritical comforter, said, 'Let me not please show partiality to a man, and on an earthly man I shall not bestow a title.'" From Job 32:21. That's in the Watchtower, 1990, February 1st, pages 10 through 14. Incidentally, since the printing of that article, you might find something a little interesting with this reference. In the latest version of the New World Translation, Job 32:21 no longer reads that way. The governing body has removed the word title from the verse. Gee, I wonder why. Title chasers. Such title chasers, and so much encouragement to do so in this organization, that they have altered the Bible itself and removed the word title. It's incredible. But how about another? See if you can spot something in this reference. It's either a gross lack of self-awareness or a subtle way to make you feel good about title chasing. Under the What Does God Require of Us brochure, pages 28 and 29, we are told this, quote, "In each congregation there are elders or overseers," titles, I guess. "They seek the lead in teaching in the congregation. They are assisted by ministerial servants," three titles and two sentences, back to the quote, "These men are not elevated above the rest of the congregation. They are not given special titles. They do not dress differently from others, neither are they paid for their work. The elders willingly look after the spiritual needs of their congregation. They can provide comfort and guidance in times of trouble," end quote. And I got to tell you, I've read that reference, What Does God Require of Us brochure, page 28 and 29. I've read it several times now. And in the first three sentences, I'm pretty sure elders, overseers, and ministerial servants, they're special titles. And yet in the third sentence, they say they're not given special titles. It's all within millimeters of each other. The same paragraph. It's subtle. And it's right there. The governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses is very, very adept at appealing to ego. They veil it in seeking privileges in the congregation, like cleaning toilets or sweeping the stadium after conventions or directing parking at the district convention or standing next to book carts and so many more things. They have built a system that speaks to people's egos, and it goes all the way down to children. I want to give you some examples if you haven't thought of them already. For the brothers or men, we've already talked about ministerial servants, elders, circuit overseers, branch overseer, Bethel elder, hospital liaison committee, back in the day, presiding overseer. And any former elders remember the politicking that went on for different titles on the elder body? Where are my fellow former elders here? Who can forget presiding overseer, service overseer, secretary? What about the sisters? They get to feel special too. They get to be pioneers, special pioneers, missionaries, and the all-important elder's wife. What about kids? Well, they get to first attain to their first ring on the ladder, the unbaptized publisher, and then publisher. And so you can see, despite having a long list of titles, they try to claim that they don't. And of course, the guys on current video go out of their way to preach humility and checking our egos at the door to be humble as they gesture with their pinky rings and title changes and, of course, their fresh beards. It's really something to watch. And unless you're paying attention, you don't even know what's happening. From the Watchtower of 1988, December 15th, page 30, under Do You Remember section, we get this, quote, "In order to resist Satan, we must examine ourselves. Do we have a weakness that Satan could exploit or is exploiting right now? For example, do we have an ego problem? Must we always be number one? If we know ourselves, then we can rectify such problems, provided that we are humble. In this way, we will not leave ourselves open to Satan," end quote. Whoever wrote that apparently never attended a typical elders meeting. I think most of us remember when the apostles were fighting on Jesus' last day of earthly life. What were they fighting about? They were fighting about who was the greatest among them as Jesus watched on. Look, the human ego is a real thing, and the governing body knows it. All of this, despite Jesus' own inspired words at John 5:41 of the New World Translation, which says simply, "I do not accept glory from men," end quote. His nine guys in upstate New York seem to have missed the memo, or apparently that Bible verse. For those Jehovah's Witness apologists that at this point in the show are thinking, come on, Stace, these are just privileges. They're not titles. They're responsibilities. They're not titles. Come on, man. Jehovah's Witnesses don't chase titles. Yeah, I have a few questions for those folks. Here they are. Why then are Jehovah's Witness women encouraged to only seek servants as husbands? Why during the district convention, or even today at JW Broadcasting, is the audience given an introduction and a bio on the speaker, including whether he is an elder, whether he's a helper to the governing body, whether he serves on the writing committee, and so much more? Why are we given that? How about how many years of service he has been a Jehovah's Witness? If titles and privileges mean nothing, then why do we care? And why do we have to be reminded before the guy starts giving us life-saving knowledge? Another, why are there life experience articles in the magazines highlighting the accomplishments of those with titles When is the last time you saw a life experience in the Watchtower Awake of a single mother who works full-time to provide for her kids, makes most meetings completely disheveled and exhausted? She does this week after week after week for years, all by herself and struggling. Who ekes out a couple of hours in preaching every month. She's a two-hour-a-month publisher back when that mattered. We don't see many of those articles, do we? I wonder if it could be her lack of a title. Somehow, she is less faithful or heroic because she only climbed up to that title of publisher, despite her daily, gut-wrenching, exhausting effort being incredibly inspiring. No one is interested in reading about it because most Jehovah's Witnesses outside her congregation don't even know who she is. Some in her own congregation don't even know who she is because despite being a publisher, she also gets that label of a low-hour publisher or weak. If you're a witness listening, you're uncomfortable. Yeah, I get it. Makes me uncomfortable. There's simply no way to deny this stuff. Those men and women are in every congregation of Jehovah's Witnesses, and we never hear about them. They don't have a title. If none of these titles matter, why do they announce it from the stage when you're appointed? Why do they go, so-and-so is now an elder? So-and-so is now an unbaptized publisher. If those things don't matter, and we're not title-chasing and appealing to ego, why do they make those announcements? As uncomfortable as it may be for most of us to hear, we are all born with an ego, and it's a good thing. It is, after all, a healthy part of the human experience. But like most everything, it can and often will be used against us. From Chuck Russell saying he was the mouthpiece of God to Judge Joe saying he speaks with angels, all of it's in print, folks, all the way up to the nine guys in New York in 2024, continuing their chokehold on 8 million plus people, even as they give women their permission to wear pants. Folks, it's all a function of a manipulated ego. The American Journal of Psychotherapy says this regarding ego in their 2018 article, An Object Relations Approach to Cult Membership, says this, quote, God, this is powerful. In essence, the cult experience degrades the ego, effectively causing the individual to regress into a transient state of borderline personality, organizational style functioning that may resolve itself once the individual leaves the group. End quote. Degraded ego that is assimilated in an organizational style functioning. Does it sound familiar? I can relate. Despite the governing body claiming humility and direction for the invisible Jesus watching on in heaven at this very moment, despite Jesus saying to never give or recognize titles, those same nine guys in New York continue to hand out titles as a way to amass an army of obedient followers in 2024. A Jehovah's Witness listening might be uncomfortable. I feel it. I get it. But they have tapped into your ego. Nowhere is the ego of the governing body more on display than the photograph in the May 15th, 1999 Watchtower of three of them autographing the Bible. What type of ego do you have to foster to autograph the Word of God? Can we get an account of Jesus signing autographs anywhere in the same book? They have leveraged such super ego into stuff like this. The Watchtower of 2011, July 15th, page 24, Simplified English Edition, quote, "We need to obey the faithful and discreet slave to have Jehovah's approval," end quote. The faithful and discreet slave is nine guys in upstate New York as of 2012, when Jesus decided to change it to exclusively the governing body. And their nine egos bleed through everything that they do and teach. And if you are a Jehovah's Witness, they have your ego in the palm of their hands. It's great to be back. I want to thank you all for joining me this week. Wherever you may be well.